Bradfords. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Right? Yes, absolutely great. It's so wonderful to see you. And you do look kind of special. There's been some kind of chatter in the room and energy. And it just, I love days like that where we really feel alive and you can see how alive we are as a community. It's just great fun. So welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I guess you kind of know that. I thought it was the mic buzzing, but that's some... Hello? Yes, we're here. Amen. Good day. So I'm here today to talk about the same old thing. There's nothing new under the sun. I often say, especially when I'm teaching, you know, there's only four things we teach. We teach the same thing again and again. We just have lots of different creative ways of saying it one day. I was saying that in a class that Reverend Cheryl was present in. She was sitting in the class, you know, and then she came to me afterwards and she goes, by the way, she's a Science of Mind minister. By the way, what are those four things you always talk about? So I say it as sort of a symbolic meaning of there's really not a lot that's new, and yet the paradox of life is that always there are all things new. And so I want to talk to you about the same old thing, but not in the same old way, because, you know, it's always fresh when we put some new focus and some new energy on it. And I want to talk about the way that there's this ordinariness of life in the exact same way that there's something spectacular about life, and that the two are always going on at the same time and in the same old way, because that's how the divine life was created. See, there's something consistent and permanent in our understanding of this that I don't want for us to miss. And so there's this gorgeous circle of life. There's this perpetual principle of life that we're always revisiting to try and figure out what the heck are those four things that we teach again and again. So I found this quote, and I will be quoting this year, by the way, Juliana, January is over. We have stepped into February. So like Juliana and I kept having these talks about how long the month of January seemed, and I noticed it showed up a lot in your Facebook, darling. So in the remainder of the year, I have this book, this Ernest Holmes book that I discovered sort of in the fall or the summer last year, and it's called A New Design for Living. And so it's sort of one of the newer publications that... Well, no, it's not. It's a reproduction of an older book that was written a long time ago, much longer ago. But for me, it's like new information. And so for me, it feels like Dr. Ernest Holmes is living with us right now. And he just wrote and published this book for us for these times that we are living in. And I don't think there's a better Science of Mind book that sort of gives that spin or shines that kind of a light so that we might adjust our perception and use principle to do that. It's a new way of seeing, right? And that's our theme here. You know, what do I see today? How can I look at this and see it in a new way today? So the new book, the new release of an old book, A New Design for Living by Dr. Holmes, the founder of this teaching, will be in the bookstore, and we're going to try and have it there all year long, so if you're interested and you want to go peek at it, it's fabulous. Listen to this quote that I took from that source. When we arrive at the point in our living where we have complete confidence in the perfect action of the law, when we arrive in our own livingness and the way we move through our day and the way we look at spiritual principle and the way we attempt to apply spiritual truths into our daily living, when we can do that and we have a high confidence in the way the spiritual law is showing up and working in our life, Holmes goes on to say, then in then we see the perfection, the confidence and the perfection of the law in its ability to create, to maintain, and to sustain life within us today, right now, to supply us with all our needs. And then when we are able to do that, that law will do it tomorrow and tomorrow and into our future. Wow. When we can do that, when we can do what? When we can maintain our own confidence in the fact that there is a spiritual law in the universe in the same way that we witness and experience the physical laws in the universe, when we have high confidence in all of that, then we will begin to notice that the law works for us in a very positive way over and over and over again. And here's the beauty of the whole thing. It's just really not the same old thing. It's that it gets better and better. That's what he's telling us. The more confidence we have, the more the results show up in our living. Isn't this good news? So it is wonderful to remember that we are divinely created. I love that idea that sometimes they say, you know, once you were just a glimmer in your father's eye. So if we think of that in a divine way, once we, all of us, we were just an idea in the mind of God that has been brought into creation. You know, first the thought, the seed is planted, and then things come into form. There's a natural creative process that's always unfolding. And so a glimmer, an idea, a sparkle of a thought that became us as this sparkle of humanity in the image and likeness of God. Why? For the delight of the Creator. And so that makes us, if you look at the idea of being creations of the divine, that makes us divine entities in a physical world. So there's no question that that divine DNA is the very intelligence that animates every cell and molecule of our being. And so that, in that way, we can see that the same old thing is really quite spectacular. You know, every religion has their own take on how things come to be. In fact, that's why there is religion. You know, way back in the beginning, when humankind began to be able to process thoughts and attempt to make sense out of life, we want answers. And so every religion has their own creation story. And that makes us rather interesting beings, I think. You know, it's the way that we want answers. And because we're human by the nature of our humanity, we're not very comfortable in uncertainty. So we either make stuff up, right? We're just making up the story of your own life, right? And enjoying telling it to everybody else. We're either making stuff up or we go to someone who we believe, and for some reason we put our faith in other people and we believe that some people have a greater authority than we do, or they're a little closer to God than we are, and then we believe what they say and voila, new religions happen. So, but it's good because it makes us more certain, I think, at least for a while. So at the last minute, I did a little research because I started remembering all the things I learned in my world religions classes in terms of how every religion has their own creativity story. And so I first wanted to look up the Hindu, I'll get to Hebrew in a minute, the Hindu story of creation is about these three gods, the Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, the creator, the preserver, and the destroyer. Such a complete cycle, you know. I mean, we in the West, we like talking about, oh yeah, and then the phoenix rises out of the ashes, but they really live it in their faith. They have those three faces of God. you know, one that creates, one that sustains, and then one that destroys, because that's part of the continuity and the movement of life. But when we look at the indigenous tribes, we look at the Native Americans, there are so many stories about how the world came to be, how humanity came to be. The raven is believed to have created man from a pea pod. That's one of the Native American tribes' traditions. The Mayans believed that the deities created people out of white and yellow corn, and so you get the sacredness of the maize. The Hopi provide that gorgeous story of Spider Woman, and she mixes her saliva with the dirt to create things. Starting to sound familiar? Getting close to the Genesis story, which, by the way, came after all of these other beliefs. The Egyptian sun god Atum wept humans into being. Oh, something poetic and gorgeous. And then we now, if we look at Jewish mysticism, we have the gorgeous Kabbalah, the Kabbalah, that belief, that story around creation from the Jewish mysticism view says that there was nothing but light. This is such a good story. There was only light that existed. There was no time. There was no space. There was no matter. And the purpose of the light was to give. Feeling the truth, the cord of truth in all the stories, something happens. But the purpose of that light was to give, but because there was no space, there was no time, there was no matter, there was nothing or no one to give to. And so light created a vessel in order to receive. And so then the light was filling up in the vessel and something goes sort of wrong and suddenly too much light. Too much light, you know. It's not, take it gradually. Emily Dickinson says, the truth must dazzle gradually or every man be blind. A woman also. So the light's filling this vessel and something goes wrong. Too much light is trying to fill in this vessel and it explodes and it bursts and shards of light go all over the universe. Trillions of parts become space, matter, and time, plants and animals and humans. And that's their story of how life began. So every religion has a story. And in Christianity, there's this idea that we come from original sin. We don't like that much. Most of the people that are drawn to this teaching, this philosophy, we don't really like that story very much, that we come from original sin. And so I stumbled, accidentally, I wasn't even researching this part of the message, but I stumbled on this little piece that said, you know, original sin is not really biblical. That there's this, that it's not written anywhere in the Bible, and that if you study the book of Genesis, there is more than one creation story. And for some reason, humanity was really liking the original sin story, the one that became the story of original sin. You know, that two perfect people given life in this garden, it's perfect, everything they need, but somehow they find a way to mess it up and sin. And so, because the idea is that that's the original parent and that we all find our lineage connected to Adam and Eve, we all inherit that sinfulness. It's just such a funny story. You know, when I think about the book of Genesis, it starts, in the beginning. In the beginning, what happens? God starts creating. And everything that God creates is good. Right? So there's this creator creating, having this fun day. It's like throwing, sometimes I look at a sunset and I think of God throwing colors up there, just slapping stuff all around. And like, wow, if I tried to do that, somebody would critique me. But no, God pulls it off, right? And when God does it, it is spectacular. That's, you know where that comes from. Do you know, do you recognize that voice? Spectacular. It's from that game Bejeweled. If you do really good dropping those little things down, you know, it'll go, good job. And then if you do really, really good, he goes, spectacular. I love it. I love it. I think of it all the time. It's like like this little voice from heaven giving me validation for something. So, so there's this idea that Adam and Eve, we inherit all that, and that it's an original sin. And what I read this week was that it wasn't until the 5th century that we really got that story, and it came from Augustine, who became Saint Augustine. And this was a theologian, we'll say, who had a lot of authority in his ideas. And so it wasn't till the 5th century. Now think about that. The book of Genesis is old, predates Jesus, some say, by maybe 950 years. And so now 900, almost 1,000, and another 400 or 500 years go by, and now somebody tells us, oh, this is what it means, you're born in original sin. Well, I say we were born in original blessing. And I understand why there are people who sort of need that idea, so that when we make mistakes or when we demonstrate, I think you said it so beautifully, Sue, at the beginning, when we demonstrate behavior that's not our best behavior, you know, then we can fall back on that. Well, yeah, we got that story. We got the Western Christian story of, yeah, but we inherit. It wasn't my bad. Or better yet, we blame it on, you know, the devil. But what is so cool right now about living right now is that we have all these scientific studies that are being reported and given to us to help us understand that, well, yes, it's true. We have a proclivity for negativity. Right? I made that up. Was that good? Yeah, that was good. We have a proclivity for negativity, that it's not that we're bad and it's not that it's in our genes because Adam and Eve gave it to us. It's because it's a part of our God-given character, and it has to do with the way the brain works. And it comes, the information now comes from the world of neuroscience. They're talking about neuroplasticity. Just why do I always get hung up with that? But it has to do with the way the brain works, and the way that there are these neural pathways in our brain that account for some of our habitual behavior and thought processes. But the wonderful, good, spectacular news is that we can rewire. So we are wired. For we come to the planet as a human being wired for a brain that is looking to protect us. And so some of the primal stuff that happens in the way we're afraid, or the way we worry about things that happen, or the way we harbor something that happened a while ago, what we know is that the brain, they're telling us, the brain worries much easier than to think positively. It's just easier in the way that the brain is made. We could put a spiritual theory around that, but I don't think we need to. I think what I want to say is that the new studies are giving us information that I think is really encouraging. So it goes right back to that quote I did in the opening where Holmes said, you know, you just build up your confidence. Learn to understand how things work, and as you understand that better and better, you will improve your skills to deal with it. So here's what we know from neuroscience. I actually think I have heard Sue Witter give this in a lecture more than one time. I must have stumbled on the same research, you know. They say that the human brain can wrap itself around fear and problems like Velcro. Actually a term the scientists are using. And in the same way, happiness and positivity can slide away like cheese on hot Teflon, right? And the scientists have named this the Velcro Teflon theory. So it's a real thing, right? So give yourself a break. If you're battling a little something, a little behavior you'd like to change, bless it. Bless it. This is not sin. This is future blessings. So we're not doomed because of this ability to change our mind. Now, you and I and all of us, we didn't need to know that because we already live in a philosophy that says, change your thinking and you will change your life. We already knew that, and we love seeing it so popularly spoken of. But there's this great neuroscientist named Rick Hansen who said he had this great theory that has been proven. The studies have indicated that this is accurate information, that if you can hold a positive thought for 15 seconds, somebody get out your phone. Not you, you're busy. Somebody pull out your cell. Tracy, you'll be perfect. Pull out your phone, and in a minute I'm going to tell you to give me a 15-second timer. I'll tell you when to start, and you say stop, but not yet. So 15 seconds of thinking positively will leave an imprint on the neurons of your brain. So if you feel good, if you think about good and then feel good, and you think about good and then you feel that good even more, now you are working to change that neural pathway. And over time, it becomes easier and easier. See, you can't just do it one time, because the brain is like, you know what I was, it's like a memory foam pillow. If you lay down on a memory foam pillow and you get up, it woof, goes, it has a memory. It goes right back to what it was, and the brain will do that too. The brain will do that too. Except that, different than a memory foam pillow, we can train the brain by working those neural pathways in terms of the positivity. So Rick Hansen says, this is a quote from him, "By following through on your conscious choices, you can rewire your responses toward love, trust, and patience. This is how we increase the bandwidth of freedom, and it is the heartbeat of authentic spirituality." Wow, authentic spirituality, as if I needed to hear that. I already believe that, you know, there's something in when we pay attention to our living that is the authentic truth of our spiritual being, being awakened in our own memory, and therefore how we live. So, yeah, does this sound familiar? This is exactly, I mean, you would think he studied, you know, we'd be tempted to say, oh, he's read The Science of Mind. But this is science. Science is proving stuff that we have said for a long, long time. And even before The Science of Mind, great thinkers have been talking this way, and poets have been intuiting all of this. So Hansen goes on to say, this is his advice to us, make a daily choice, an hourly choice, to focus on the good, the true, and the beautiful. Make a choice. So we're going to do it right now. I need a timer. We're going to take 15 seconds. That's all we're going to do, is take 15 seconds to begin this process. So go ahead, start the timer right now. Close your eyes if you're comfortable doing that, and just begin to imagine something good. What's the image that comes to your mind of good? And see it and feel it. And now imagine seeing something beautiful. What is it that takes your breath away in its beauty? And now imagine that you're sitting with a loved one or a furry friend. And that as you touch, there's something that happens in that feeling of goodness and love and beauty and truth. Time? All right. That was probably a little more than 15 seconds, and we did just a little. I mean, my heart is still, I can still feel that sort of moving through me. 15 seconds. So right now, you have just imprinted your brain. You have just changed the pathways of the neurons in that neural pathway of your brain. You are reshaping the pattern of your brain itself. And you have begun an intentional new process. This is our life. This is our life. This is such a simple and a joy-filled experience. And you don't have to get into it. You could just be thinking about something wonderful you're going to prepare for a meal later and spend your 15 minutes giving thanks for how wonderful it is to be able to taste food or cook food or see the beauty of fresh food, or take that in any direction you want. Go to an art museum. Imagine in your mind your favorite place to vacation. 15 seconds is all it takes. So original sin, maybe. Maybe some people need that, but I say original goodness is where I want us to plant ourselves and to recognize that maybe there is something like original sin, but original good came first. Because we are created by a divine creator that preceded even humanity. So think of that light desiring to give, creating a vessel. You are the vessel. And we become that which the good and the light can pour into. And we do this on a regular basis. And yes, there might be some great explosion, but it will be the bands of constriction that have been holding back the possibilities of all you can be. Yeah, yeah. Never forget, God first, always. All there is God. That's where we start prayer. That's where we start life. So, a little here, a little there. And then that same old thing, because we're giving it like spiritual daily vitamins, because we're changing the same old thing day by day, we begin to see that our life begins to change. I want to read to you from the Science of Mind textbook, because this is a passage that actually Mark Reed did a video once. I remember a long time ago he tried this and put a video on Facebook on Home Says a Lot. There you are, Mark. You put a drop of water. You got some ugly water and you put a drop at a time in it. You flush it out and eventually you have pure water. Well, here's one of the, there are many passages, but here is one of my favorite ones in the Science of Mind textbook. Home says, right thought, constantly poured into consciousness, will eventually purify it. Listen carefully. Right thought. Feel that. Feel how what this is saying. Right thought, constantly poured into consciousness, will eventually purify it. Right? 15 seconds. A little intentional time to straighten your thinking out. Discord might be likened to a bottle of impure water. Healing could be likened to the process of dropping pure water into that bottle, a drop at a time, until the whole is clean and pure. Now, someone might ask, why can't you just turn the bottle upside down? Drain it all out all at once. Get rid of all those impurities. And Holmes says, well, sometimes this happens. But not very often. Meanwhile, a drop at a time will finally eliminate the impurities and produce a healing. Woo! Yeah, that's a good amen. That's a good amen. In the textbook, in the chapter on the principles for successful living, I'm trying so hard not to go, my favorite chapter, because I have a lot of favorites, don't I? Holmes says that through constantly applying ourselves to truth, we gradually increase in wisdom and understanding, right? This is the same stuff, same old thing, but bringing it in to a way that it can grow and expand in its goodness. It's the drop-by-drop rule. And remember that this is a mathematically perfect statement. It's precise in that. That's why we say it's like math. Then he goes on to say, this is all on page 271. That page alone, wow, that's a really powerful, good page. Then he goes on to say, if day by day we have a greater understanding and a clearer concept, if daily we realize a little more truth, if every day we apply that truth in our actions, eventually we shall be made free. Mm. So dare to see your life the way you want it to be. See it in your mind. Sit quietly and create the mental images of all the good that you desire. Taste it. Bask in it smell it, touch it, feel it, but feel it, own it as if it's already done. You know, the human body is the best illustration ever, right? You break a fingernail, it grows back. You cut your hair, it grows out again, and you got to go back and visit the barber or sit in the chair at the beauty shop. You know, your skin is shedding all the time, and because new skin, our body is constantly renewing itself even as we age, and these things take on a different look. You know, it's like, oh, I'm thinning. Yeah, but you're still living, and it's still growing, and your body's still healing itself again and again. So stand in that truth. We are renewed constantly because that is the nature of life. And you know, if you look at anything mechanical, it is the nature of mechanics that things wear out. You know, that's why we have to get our cars tuned up. You know, it's why sometimes the garage door opener doesn't work as well as it used to, or the vacuum, whatever. It's mechanical things in physical form, and we're like that. But the essence of who we are is that which never changes. It is that part of that perpetual movement and ongoingness, and sometimes we grow, and it's time to shed this so that we can have that greater next experience. Yes, it's a paradox. And you know what? The paradox is so funny that it's hard to understand paradox. The seeming contradictions of life, the mystics get it. The poets understand it. Emerson wrote, the years teach much that the days will never show. And T.S. Eliot, one of my favorite quotes, you know, return to that place where you once began, but know it for the first time. And isn't that the beauty of living this life? We have those opportunities. So, same old thing. There's an element of that ordinariness, but the bottom of it, below it, or in a deeper or greater way, it is spectacular. Never forget that. Acknowledge this. Rejoice in it. Holmes says, you are like everyone else, something trying to be made whole, something with a deep yearning for security, a deep and unspeakable longing for love and for peace. Wow. It's a part of who we are. We don't need neuroscience to tell us that, but it sure is good to have science on the side of spirituality. I really like that. So let's celebrate our uniqueness, even as we live in the paradox. Let's just know life is spectacular. So take a breath, and I'd like for us to move into that holy, sacred space of prayer. And so I would ask the practitioners and the ministers in the room, if you would please just stand and surround the room. And let us use our confidence. Let us take that essence of us that is the human, willing to devote time to the spiritual. And we move into the practice of prayer. Oh, how good it is to acknowledge the ordinary and that which is extraordinary. To remember again that there is that which is divine that is always present right here, right now, in this very room. All the love of the universe, all the beauty, all the truth, everything spectacular, the shining divine light of life itself. And as I just feel that moving in my own being, I recognize the love of God is right here, right at the core of every living being. And I feel that love I know it is that perpetual movement, that divine activity, that which restores us and brings us again back to that sense of balance, that place of standing in truth where we can allow the wholeness and perfection of our being to be expressed through us and as us. I feel the love of God, and I rejoice in knowing that it is this healing force, that in this union we join in that great divine flow of life. We stand in this place of harmony, of perfect order, of all things coming together for the good, for the highest and the best expression of all of it. All things, all glorious expressions of perfection, of health, of wholeness, of the release of any restrictions, so that there is no limitation, that we stand in this solid, centered place of knowing that the gifts of the kingdom are freely given, that we are fully sourced, that we are sustained and maintained by this divine love in the universe. So I know there's something spectacular happening even now in response to the words of this prayer, that there is a healing going on as we allow ourselves to become the vessel, to receive the good, to open ourselves to recognize that the grace of God is moving through this room right now, and all we need do is say yes. We say yes to life. We say yes to God, to Spirit, to all the good. And in this way, we are reshaping our life, our very life. And so we start at the beginning. 15 seconds of knowing our good and realizing scientifically that we are changed. We are changed every time we stand in this light, in this truth, in this knowing with a high confidence that our tomorrow will be better than today, and that the tomorrow after the tomorrow after the tomorrow forever reveals the presence of Spirit itself, and that that presence desires to express in our lives. And we say yes. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. For we realize this day there are no limits to our good. And in this space of just feeling the pureness of gratitude, I release the words of this prayer into that divine life that says, yes, my child, yes. And so it is. Amen.